Hello, and welcome into the light. I'm Catherine Michel. On this program, we're going to continue our look at Nadia Boulanger's great contribution to 20th century music through her influence on European and American composers. Last week, I talked about Boulanger as composer and teacher. We listened to some of her music and that of her sister Lily and her students Julia Perry and Louise Talma. Donald Grantham came into the studio to talk to us in person about his experiences studying with Mademoiselle Boulanger. On this program, we'll continue with the words of her student Aaron Copland and the music of her students Thea Musgrave and Priot Rainieri. We'll end with a beautiful piece by Lily Boulanger. First, in case you missed last week's broadcast, let me briefly recap that Nadia Boulanger lived from 1887 to 1979, mostly in Paris, although she spent several years in the United States after World War II. Her father and grandfather taught at the Paris Conservatory, and her mother, who was 18 when she married the 62-year-old Monsieur Boulanger, was a professional singer and Nadia's first teacher. Nadia trained at the Paris Conservatory, concentrating in organ and composition, and won second place in the Prix de Rome competition in 1908. She gave up composition early, however, and devoted herself to teaching, for which she had a tremendous gift. As a member of the faculties of the Paris Conservatory, the École Normale, and the American Conservatory at Fontainebleau, Boulanger had a large class of private pupils drawn from all over the world, men and women who became, with the help of her tutelage, some of the best-loved and most successful composers of the mid-20th century. One of the first Americans to seek Nadia Boulanger's tutelage was Aaron Copland, who, in 1960, wrote a tribute to her for Harper's Magazine entitled Nadia Boulanger, An Affectionate Portrait. I'd like to read portions of it to you now. It is almost 40 years since I first rang the bell at Nadia Boulanger's Paris apartment and asked her to accept me as her composition pupil. Any young musician may do the same thing today, for Mademoiselle Boulanger lives at the same address, in the same apartment, and teaches with the same formidable energy. The only difference is that she was then comparatively little known outside the Paris music world, and today there are few musicians anywhere who would not concede her to be the most famous of living composition teachers. Our initial meeting had taken place in the Palace of Fontainebleau several months before that first Paris visit. Through the initiative of Walter Damrosch, a summer music school for American students was established in a wing of the palace in 1921, and Nadia Boulanger was on the staff as teacher of harmony. I arrived, fresh out of Brooklyn, age 20, and all agog at the prospect of studying composition in the country that had produced Debussy and Ravel. A fellow student told me about Mademoiselle Boulanger and convinced me that a look in on her harmony class would be worth my while. I needed convincing. After all, I had already completed my harmonic studies in New York and couldn't see how a harmony teacher could be of any help to me. What I had not foreseen was the power of Mademoiselle Boulanger's personality and the special glow that informs her every discussion of music, whether on the simplest or the most exalted plane. To what extent Mademoiselle Boulanger had serious ambitions as a composer has never been entirely established. Curiously enough, I have no memory of discussing the role of women in music with Mademoiselle. Whatever her attitude might have been, she herself was clearly a phenomenon for which there was no precedent. In my own mind, she was a continuing link in that long tradition of the French intellectual woman in whose salon philosophy was expounded and political history made. In similar fashion, Nadia Boulanger had her own salon where musical aesthetics was argued and the musical future engendered. It was there that I saw, and sometimes even met, the musical great of Paris. Maurice Ravel, Igor Stravinsky, Albert Roussel, Darius Milhaud, Arthur Honegger, Francis Poulenc, Georges Auric. She was the friend of Paul Valéry and Paul Claudel, and liked to discuss the latest works of Thomas Mann, of Proust, of André Gide. Her intellectual interests and wide acquaintanceship among artists in all fields were an important stimulus to her American students. Through these interests, she whetted and broadened their cultural appetites. It would be easy to sketch a portrait of Mademoiselle Boulanger as a personality in her own right. Those who met her or hear her talk are unlikely to forget her physical presence. Of medium height and pleasant features, she gave off, even as a young woman, a kind of objective warmth. She had none of the ascetic intensity of a Martha Graham or the toughness of a Gertrude Stein. On the contrary, in those early days, she possessed an almost all old-fashioned womanliness, a womanliness that seemed quite unaware of its own charm. Her low-heeled shoes and long black skirts and pince-nez glasses contrasted strangely with her bright intelligence and lively temperament. In more recent years, she has become smaller and thinner, quasi nun-like in appearance. But her low-pitched voice is as resonant as ever, and her manner has lost none of its decisiveness. My purpose here, however, is to concentrate on her principal attribute, her gift as teacher. It begins, perhaps, with the conviction that one is in the presence of an exceptional musical mentality. By a process of osmosis, one soaks up attitudes, principles, reflections, knowledge. That last is a key word. It is literally exhilarating to be with a teacher for whom the art one loves has no secrets. Nadia Boulanger knew everything there was to know about music. She knew the oldest and the latest music, pre-Bach and post-Stravinsky, and knew it cold. More important to the budding composer than Mademoiselle Boulanger's technical knowledge was her way of surrounding him with an air of confidence. The reverse, her disapproval, I am told, was annihilating in its effect. Copland talks some about the specifics of his own compositions, and then he continues. She is able to grasp the still uncertain contours of an incomplete sketch, examine it, and foretell the probable and possible ways in which it may be developed. She is expert in picking flaws in any work in progress, and knowing why they are flaws. At the period when I was her pupil, she had but one all-embracing principle, namely, the desirability of aiming first and foremost at the creation of what she called la grande ligne, the long line in music. Much was included in that phrase, the sense of forward motion, of flow and continuity in the musical discourse, the feeling for inevitability, for the creating of an entire piece that could be thought of as a functioning entity. These generalizations were given practical application. Her eye, for instance, was always trained upon the movement of the bass line as controlling agent for the skeletal frame of the harmony's progressive action. Aaron Copland ends his tribute by saying, in 1959, when Harvard University conferred an honorary degree on Nadia Boulanger, a modest gesture was made toward recognition of her standing as teacher and musician. America, unfortunately, has no reward commensurate with what Nadia Boulanger has contributed to our musical development. But in the end, the only reward she would want is the one she already has, the deep affection of her many pupils everywhere. Now, let's hear some music. You all know the wonderful music of Aaron Copland, so next time you hear it, think about Nadia Boulanger's influence on him. As our interest here is in bringing women composers into the light, we'll hear from the longtime student of Boulanger, Thea Musgrave. Since I've talked a lot already, I'll just tell you that Thea Musgrave is a British composer now living in the United States. We'll listen to her horn concerto, which was commissioned by Mario de Bonaventura for Barry Tuckwell, the horn player, and the Dartmouth Congregation of the Arts. It was composed in 1971. Miss Musgrave says of the work, "The starting point for the horn concerto was a picture postcard from Barry Tuckwell in Mexico. It showed several monolithic statues surrounding a central figure. It was this that gave me the idea for the last section of the work, where the orchestral horn players are strategically placed round the hall so as to surround the soloist. Throughout the work, the brass section form a kind of concertante group set against the rest of the orchestra, and when they play, it is to interrupt, distort, and, as it were, to mock. So the horn players actually move into the hall and place themselves behind sections of the audience, apparently to great effect. Let's hear it now with Barry Tuckwell, horn, and the Scottish National Orchestra, conducted by the composer."